Sunday Revolution.
The future of radio.
You are weak. Unsure of yourself.
Actually,
the fact that you possess a sense of morality and we do not gives us an evolutionary advantage.
CyberstationUSA.com.
And if history has proven anything,
there's another problem with TV, believe it or not.
It is that evolution always wins.
We're back to the Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network. Remember my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Well, you know, this, I'm so excited to have her as a monthly guest. We're talking about more than that with all the cool connections she has. But we want to welcome back to the program, from Charlie Wilson's War, the story was all about her, Joanne Herring. Joanne, how are you?
Neil, thank you. It's an honor to be with you.
I'm excited to talk to you because, again, I learned so much from you. And I tell you, I could stay on the phone for hours just talking off air with you. But I know that you have a lot of updates going on. But I really am concerned after this election, what has happened in the Middle East, especially with your concern for Afghanistan. And you want to try to do it in other places as well. But we're seeing a really, really a lot of issues since our last interview. So educate us, basically, what's going on in the Middle East, and what are your concerns?
Neil, thank you. What is important about what I have to say is not me or anything I've done, but what happened to me. I was thrown into these countries, not with the heads of state, though I do know them and I've worked with them, but with the very poor. The people where the problems develop and the people who then perpetrate the attacks on the United States or change the governments by the fact that they are manipulated by leaders, often from other states, like Iran is manipulating what is happening in Afghanistan, as is Russia and a lot of other Middle Eastern countries. So the thing is, you see, when you're dealing with people who are 80% illiterate, they have no means of reading for themselves and evaluating situations. They can only go with what they see and what happens to them and what the few people that they trust have to say, like, for instance, their mullahs. So if the mullahs are part of a terrorist organization, the people are led that way. So it doesn't mean they're enemies of the United States. They just don't understand what's happening. And we don't understand what it is to live in a country. If you ever have had your water cut off, you suddenly, or your electricity cut off in a storm, you realize how dependent we are and how lucky we are to live like we do. These people don't live that way. They live, often they have one meal a day if they're lucky. They have very bad water. They're sick from dysentery. And you see, until you can have enough to eat and water, you can't learn. And then after you learn, you've got to have a job. And if you don't have a job, then you join anything that you can find that's going to pay you. You see, in Afghanistan, my interest in Afghanistan is not Afghanistan, though I have great admiration for the Afghan people. It is to protect this country because, you see, right now that is the center of terrorism training and has always been. Because our forces are there, it's been latent. But once our forces leave, it'll be terrible. And again, we'll be threatened by them. And the tragedy is America doesn't realize that people from these countries, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, Taliban, the Egyptian Brotherhood, the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, all of them are coming across our borders by the thousands, and they have been, even before 9/11. And thanks to you, we're going to have Congressman McCall on next week, who is a friend of mine, but he is a friend because he heads Homeland Security in the House. And he knows about what exactly what is happening and can illustrate what I'm saying to you. So my point is this. We are not like they are. They are not like we are. And we have to deal with these people because they are surrounding us, and they control the oil. This is the economy of the world. And they are coming across our borders by the thousands, and they don't always mean well for us. So it's very important that we understand what's happening in the Middle East. Now, let's go to the Arab Spring. This was no Arab Spring. This was the craziest thing on earth. It started with the, perhaps, we don't really know, it started with the students who were really well-meaning. They were educated. They did understand, and they wanted to get rid of dictators. Now, where does America stand in that? We have to stand very firmly and say, oh, we hate dictators. Of course we hate dictators. But how much can we promise the world? How much can we promise every country in the world democracy? How are we going to do that? First, they have to be educated. If you're not educated, you can't vote. You don't even understand what it is to be have a democracy, and it can't function. And the countries have to build themselves up economically enough to have a middle class that can support a democracy. So what happens, no matter how well-meaning these young people are, you overthrow a dictator, and what do you get? Something worse.
Something worse. Now, the question I have to ask is, why do you think you're seeing, now we're seeing the violence in Egypt, we're seeing violence, because I know you study and look at this all the time, especially with, like I said, helping Afghanistan out in many ways. I'm just seeing a lot more, after President Obama was reelected, a lot more violence in the Middle East. Why do you think it's happening?
It's happening. And see, it's all interrelated, Neil. That's why I went into that diatribe about they've got to understand the people. They're all alike. It isn't just that different Egypt, different and this and this. Syria and Iran are our enemies. We allowed the Shah to be thrown all out of Iran. And are the Iranians better off?
No.
They're horribly not better off. So the thing is, that's why I say, we can't promise this democracy. Okay, what's happened? They overthrew Mubarak. He wasn't a good guy, but he did have peace with Israel. He did work with the United States and vote with us in the UN. Now what has happened is the Egyptian Brotherhood has taken over 80% of the Congress, and this crazy thing about how they were going to create peace in the Middle East was only a ploy to get started in taking over all the countries of the Middle East. And we must not lose our friends over there because we can't afford it. We don't have the money to support all these governments. And I don't want to send your children and my children over there to defend them either. That's not our job. When they're ready for democracy, then they should take over their countries and have a democratic government. But until then, they've got to have just as stable a government as possible. And we have got to live with them as they are. Not, you see, like in Libya. That was the craziest thing. After Gaddafi was not a good man, but women didn't wear veils. Education was mandatory. There was nobody hungry. Libya was a rich country. It was making economic deals after Reagan bombed Gaddafi. Gaddafi got smart, and he said, okay, I can't beat him. I'm going to join him. And he did. And the American businessmen were doing business over there, and there was hope that maybe it would evolve into a democracy because, after all, Gaddafi couldn't live forever. Okay, they knock out Gaddafi. What's happened? 2 days later, women are back in veils. Girls can't go to school, and the whole country is totally upset, and are now our enemies. So what are we doing over there?
And what I'm concerned about is right after, it seemed like everything quieted down except Benghazi. Everything quieted down until the election was over. Now it's like, okay, we can do whatever we want to do, and we're going to, in this Arab Spring, as you're saying, is not an Arab Spring. Yeah, there were educated people trying to lead to democracy, but the wrong people are in control of many governments in the Middle East now, right?
You got it. You see, because there are not enough educated people. They can't sustain anything. And you see, the funding for a lot of these organizations is coming from Iran and from Syria and from Russia. Let me tell you, and China and a lot of places. This isn't a worldwide deal. And all these organizations are interrelated. And they are state sponsored, meaning they are paid for by states that do not like us and who are out to conquer us. And they're sending people across our borders to disrupt us in every way possible, too. I mean, we can't imagine this. You see, that's what's so hard. But think about this, Neil. If somebody had said to you before 9/11 that they were going to bomb the Twin Towers and the Pentagon and the White House and all the plans that they had, what would you have said?
I would have been shocked.
I would have said you're nuts. You need a psychiatrist
long vacation. Yeah.
I wouldn't have ever believed that could have happened. But this is happening all around us while we drink our beer and get very tired of people telling us all this stuff. So we turn on the football games and Mad Men. I do it too.
So I guess what we're gathering from this whole thing, Joanne, is that there. How can we make sure that the Middle East goes in the right direction? I know you're not happy with the new administration, but I think you're, again, showing your humanitarian reasoning why it's happening.
I don't care who. I am looking at what's practical for you, Neil, your kids, my grandchildren. If somebody's coming into your house with a gun, are you going to protect your kids?
Yes.
Well, that's what you're doing, but with your country right now. And we have to realize that we are threatened and our way of life is threatened. And I hate being the Sandra that opens that box and tells you these things, but it is true. And so, yes, and what can we do? Okay, first, we have got to stop hammering our friends, people, and think about who's shooting with us. And who's shooting at us? Because we cannot change the world. This business of saying that's our responsibility is crazy. We don't have the resources. And as I said, the blood of our children is too precious. So, okay, we got to say, who are our enemies? First, Syria. Syria is not a good country for the United States. They are the partner of Iran. And they are, is Iran our friend?
No, okay. They're not. They're not our friend.
And is North Korea our friend?
Absolutely not.
No. So who is? And of course, we are always wondering about China, and I think we're scared to death of that.
and we, when we get back, I want to really go into what your thought process. The concern I have that we don't see in the mainstream media, and this is again my historical background, and I think people are being educated while also talking to a fantastic celebrity in Joanne Herring from Charlie Wilson's War. When we get back, I want to really touch base into looking at the whole thing when you mentioned countries that I'm very
we have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shake-up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyrus Mission USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Concerned about when you mention countries that are supposed to be our allies, like Russia, them being involved with terrorist organizations. I'm very concerned. You're listening to the Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network, and we're with Joanne Herring from Charlie Wilson's War, and I'm really enjoying the conversation. I learned so much every time, Joanne, and you're very easy to talk to. So thanks again for being on the show.
Well, Neil, thank you. And I don't want to do any monologues, so ask me some questions.
No.
I've been doing monologues because I wanted people to understand first what we're dealing with over there.
Exactly. You're not definitely doing monologues. You're educating us in so many ways of what's going on. The concern, I have questions, and this gets more of a Q&A second segment, is I'm excited about all these cool guests that you'll be bringing on the show, on the network later on. The one question I wanted, when you mentioned Russia, should we be concerned with Russia?
All right. Now, let me tell you this: where my information comes from. It comes from some very important, concerned people in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And this is what they say is so terrible, that the Russians are heading the drug deployment in Europe, and they're working with the Iranians, and this is how they do it. You've heard about the Pakistan army having elements in it that are tied into the terrorist organizations. This is not true. There is this organization in Pakistan that is very dangerous, and it is dealing with Russia and Iran. And what they do is they get the drugs from Afghanistan, the Iranians bring them out, they take them to Russia, and the Russians distribute them in to Europe and the United States. They pay for them in strategic weapons. So this is where it is very frightening, because these organizations are being armed through the drug trade. And no, Russia is not our friend. They have never been our friend. Putin is a member of the KGB. They're interested in restructuring the whole Soviet Union. Of course, I can't comment on that, but they just watch the news. But you see, you can't always believe.
No, I don't hear this in the news. That's why we have now our news source on the political side of education. And unbelievably enough, Joanne, I did not know this. I mean, I knew a little bit, but not the drugs. And would you say
this? I got from people over there, living there, that I know.
Okay, we now it's leaked to millions of people. All right, maybe Good.
That's what we need to get the word out, and then you need to believe it. See, people, we don't know what to believe anymore. We're fed so much disinformation. The only reason that I'm a good source of information is that I'm working with the very poor, And I know where these sources are, and I see that. You see, a lot of the people that go over there, correspondents, even presidents and Congress people, they only see what people want them to see, because they're just there a few days. If you have to work with the people daily, you see where these things come from and why the people think the way they do. You see, right now, the reason I'm so intent on working in Afghanistan is to stop this, so that they don't need to grow poppies. The Afghans don't want to grow poppies, but it's all they have. They've had 30 years of war. They have no infrastructure. They're starving to death, and they don't have good water, food, or education. So that's what we're trying to do for them. And let me tell you what happened. When we first started talking, we were trying to set up a model village to see if the five elements, food, water, health care, education, and jobs, simultaneously offered to the people, not as a gift, they had to buy them. And we set up microloans so that they could pay for these things themselves. But by doing it themselves, they first felt very proud. Secondly, they own them and they protect them. Well, it worked. We found out the Taliban called us. They said, we have never seen anything like what you've done in the desert. We went into the desert where there was absolutely nothing. And we put in soybeans. We put in wheat. But we didn't give it to them. As I said, they paid for half of everything. Then we had to do water. And we worked with the Italians to put in water system. Do you know how much a water system costs? $2,500 for a pump.
Oh, that's it. Wow. And then,
you see, we did a whole village that impacts 20,000 people for $400,000, which is half of what it costs to keep an American soldier in the field 1 year.
Oh, wow. And I think what's so great about what you're doing and giving us the updates all the time is that it's not so expensive. And if you don't give it to the government where it's corrupt, and you go straight to the people, and you borrow.
We don't have to give it to them, Neil. That's the thing. The money's already over there.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, another thing we're trying to do right now that is so, it won't cost the American taxpayers one penny. Here's the deal. There is all this equipment, hundreds of trucks, dozers, drag lines, thousands of containers that have never even been opened, and they're lying around the desert. Okay, if to get them out of Afghanistan would be terribly expensive, because Afghanistan is a landlocked country. It has no ports. So in order to transport these things out, which, number one, they're not worth transporting because they're old equipment, but they'd be fine in Afghanistan. But to take them out through Pakistan, Iran, or one of the other stands that are around Afghanistan that have a port would cost thousands of American lives, because they have to go through enemy territory where there are IEDs and things like that. Why expose our soldiers to that when you can sell them to the sell these trucks and things to the Afghan people using micro loans that are set up by the charitable organizations in the United States, which means they borrow the money and they buy the truck and they pay for it over time. And then they pay the money back. And it's the same deal that works in the United States. But it teaches them free enterprise. It'll develop the middle class. And if a guy's got a truck and a job, you think he's going to let the Taliban tell him what to do?
No, not at all. So you're doing something different in a lot of ways because of the loans and having to pay back. Where if you gave it to them, what have you seen in entitlement even in a country like this? What would happen?
The same thing. A lot of the times people tell them, you know, the mullah, if, say, he's belongs to the Hezbollah, which is funded by Iran, he'll tell them, well, that maybe the devil has been in that truck, and so they better not even touch it. See, these people are so uneducated that if the mullah tells them something like that, they believe it.
Oh, my gosh.
And you see, there are many empty buildings over there that have been built by USAID and people like that that did not do anything but build a building. You have to get a teacher, and you have to be sure the teacher shows up. And you have to be sure that he has a ride. You see, they don't have cars, and they don't even have highways over there. A lot of times, the teacher just comes on a motorbike, if he's lucky. But see, having motorbikes gives us an opportunity to teach them how to repair motorbikes, and that gives them a job. And when you create jobs, you create responsibility in people and pride.
Exactly, for a country so impoverished in so many ways. So do you think that what you're seeing in Afghanistan, if we allow the Muslim Brotherhood to take over all the countries in the Middle East, almost all of them, and we don't have any friends except Israel in the Middle East, do you think that we're going to see the same types of terrorist training centers all pop up everywhere if that happens?
Oh, Neil, they're already there. But the worst thing is, and this Congressman McCall will talk to you about, and I'm aware of it too, is they're coming across our border. They're already here, Neil. That's what America doesn't get. They're here. And as they take over the Middle East and they get the oil, then they'll have the money to fund all these things. And you see, this is one thing. Oh, please, America, listen to me. Do not allow the Egyptian Brotherhood to take over the Emirates states, Bahrain, and Saudi Arabia. They are our friends. We may not agree with half of what, or three quarters of what they do, but the Saudis paid for half of the war in Afghanistan. They matched us dollar for dollar. They paid for half of Desert Storm, dollar for dollar. Why or what or anything doesn't matter. Who else in the world has ever helped us? And who helps us when there's an oil problem? The Saudis usually step up and allow more oil to come be produced when other countries turn off the spigot. I'm not defending anything about them. I'm only saying, listen, they're our friend. If we lose them, we lose billions of dollars that are going into the pockets of terrorists. And we can't afford that.
Well, talking to you today, Joanne, and I'm giving you a little bit of a commentary. I know you want to get as much information out to the listeners as possible, especially all over the world listening to this broadcast, which, again, because we're on in Canada and also in the UK, meaning radio stations in those countries, that ultimately we have to look out the entire world at what's going on in the Middle East because of China, which we were mentioning before. See, you and I could have a conversation every week in a lot of ways with different things that you bring to the table. But if China decides to stop being a capitalist country in certain ways, meaning trying to make money, and then once they see that they're not making any money and they decide to cheat, we're dead in the water, because then there'd be Iran, China, Russia, and we would be in a world war again. So I think we have to really watch out for what decisions we're making right now, which, again, our country's protection. So the fiscal cliff, all these different things. People out here listening, Joanne has nothing to benefit from this. She's out to help the people of Afghanistan and to stop terrorism in Afghanistan so that our country is safe. So, Joanne, where can we find more information on you, and looking forward to our conversation with Congressman McCall next week?
WWW.JoanneHaring, I think it's JoanneKingHaring.com, and then, of course, the Marshall Plan Charities for Afghanistan is also online. We don't spend very much money. We have a very shabby site, but we're spending the money on the people and actually getting something done. So it will tell you what we're doing, and I'd love people to look at my picture gallery, to buy my book, which is available on Amazon, which is called Diplomacy and Diamonds, and they are going to be There's going to be a documentary on what I'm doing, and after that, there's a movie planned and a television series. So we'll be talking more to the world about what we're doing. But it's going to be, some of it's going to be fun, and I do like to have a good time, Neil. I don't just like this.
Well, see, that's why I told you you're going to bring celebrities on with your segment as well. Not just, remember, we first came on, just depending on the topic, I can talk about anything. So if you go back and listen to all the network shows, you'll say, oh my gosh, he's interviewing rap stars, he's interviewing everyone. Well, I am, and it's a lot of fun, and I appreciate you calling, and look forward to our conversation next week.
Thanks, Neil.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. Stitcher.
Stitcher.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
Stitcher.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
All right, take care, John. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to this Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Author's Corner on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, Author's Corner. And I'm really excited after the unbelievable experience at the Miami Book Fair to now be partnering with Triumph Books with some really interesting sports authors. And after having all these celebrities on, I'm looking forward to talking to author Les Krantz. He's author of Wrigley Field, The Centennial 100 Years at the Friendly Confines. Les, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you very much. I'm sorry I might not be such celebrity status, but Wrigley Field has been full of them for a whole century, and we can talk about that.
Absolutely. Well, you're definitely, anytime when we talk about Wrigley Field, it is just, the history is amazing. There's only a few ballparks you can go in Major League Baseball that you can say, wow. And before, you know, they built all those old-time ballparks, there was pretty much just Wrigley Field. And it's just unlike anything else, isn't it?
Neil, Wrigley Field is the oldest ballpark in the National League. The oldest one in the American League is Fenway Park. It's a couple years older than Wrigley Field. But, you know, these grand old ballparks, you know, when you go in there, and I don't care who you're rooting for, you can be rooting for the Cubs or the Yankees or the Cardinals, it doesn't make any difference. You get this feeling here, this historical feeling, you know, of some of the greats that played there and just some of the great baseball moments. I can't begin to tell you what a great year this has been for me, having, you know, being able to dive in this thing and 100 years of great baseball history. There's just so much there, and of course we'll talk about it in this half hour. And you just tell me what you want to focus on, because boy, there's plenty.
Oh, there's definitely plenty. When I see these unbelievable authors from Triumph Books, and I look at sports, I'm just a huge sports nut. So let's go ultimately to, I guess, when the research that was involved, Les, when you wanted to take on this project. Are you a Chicago Cubs fan yourself?
Yeah, I moved just across the Wisconsin border a few years ago, but spent most of my life in Chicago. And this book we're talking about, by the way, the title is Wrigley Field, the Centennial. And when I first went to Wrigley Field about 40-something years ago, I said to myself, "Gee, I am going to write a book on this thing someday." And I guess I procrastinated a little bit, Neil. But we just came out with this book a couple of weeks ago, Wrigley Field, the Centennial. And one of the things that a lot of people have commented on is the documentary film on the DVD that comes with a book. When you buy the book, it's a beautiful coffee table book with several hundred photographs. There's also a DVD that has a documentary film by the same title, Wrigley Field, the Centennial. It's narrated by Lou Boudreau Jr. His father was the voice of the Cubs for 30 years, and Ron Santo Jr., who also was the voice of the Cubs. By the way, both of them were on the Cubs, the Cubs team. Ron Santo, for over 20 years, he was their star third baseman, one of the greatest Cubs of all time. Lou Boudreau was actually the manager in 1960. So we have just great history with two narrators who just kind of lived that whole thing as kids. They practically grew up in Wrigley Field.
Well, absolutely, and it's something again, that family atmosphere that Wrigley Field brings to the table for sure. And being the fan, there's definitely a tremendous amount of research in this book, isn't there? For once you just took on this project and said, "I'm going to write it."
Well, believe it or not, a few of the things I remember, okay? But, yeah, we had to do an awful lot of research. But, when you can remember some of the things and you actually were there and you saw it, or in a few cases I saw it on television too, it makes it very special. I don't know if you know this, but Babe Ruth's famous called shot, where he pointed out to center field and then whacked it out there, that was at Wrigley Field. That wasn't at Yankee Stadium. That was in the 1932 World Series.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. That's a definite interesting thing for our listeners to know as well. Wow. Take us, when you were researching and finding out about that, did you know that always as a Chicago Cubs fan it took place?
Well, I do a lot. Do a lot of baseball books. I guess I did know that. I'll tell you another thing, that I didn't know. Lou Gehrig was scouted at Wrigley Field. The Yankees found him at Wrigley Field in 1920. He actually played in a high school game against Lane Tech, a big and important high school in Chicago. And they saw this kid. He was just a student himself. He was from a high school team in the New York area, and they signed him up. But they found him at Wrigley Field.
Wow. Interesting story. The history of Wrigley Field is amazing. And I guess when they first built this ballpark, was other ballparks like that ballpark? If you said it's one of the oldest in the National League.
I tell you something. It's going to sound funny when I say it now in 2013. But when this thing was built, they thought it was a marvel of the modern age. It was the most modern thing that they had ever seen in 1914 when it opened. We got a little head start on the Centennial. It actually is not for a couple of months, but how much authors and publishers love Christmas, and we thought this would be a great opportunity for somebody to give a great great Christmas gift. It's Wrigley Field, the Centennial. I got to plug my book. I hope you don't mind.
Sure. Hey, you keep plugging away. You're great, Les, and we'll just keep talking about all the kind of memories of the Wrigley. I think that we can talk a little bit about the book, but then also your memories of Wrigley Field are important as well, because again, I remember specifically just my memories at Three River Stadium, going to Pirate games, and then I guess a little bit at PNC Park. But to understand specifically ballparks and how they bring back memories in so many ways, and what made Wrigley Field at that time a state of the art facility? What made it different compared to other ballparks?
Well, first of all, it held 14,000 people, if you can believe that.
Okay.
It was constructed right by the L, you know, the commuter train in Chicago, where everybody goes go to work. And, you know, the architecture was very, very modern. They had a parking lot for cars, automobiles. In some of the old shots in the book, you'll see a horse and buggies in front of Wrigley Field.
Oh, wow.
So it was built. It was built for cars, and also the stuff that they used to groom the field were motorized vehicles. And an awful lot of the ballparks back in that era didn't have it. You know, Neil, you asked me about my favorite Wrigley Field moment. And I think everybody has one. And there was a little bit of a lead-up to my favorite Wrigley Field moment. You know, I'm originally from St. Louis. And, of course, I grew up with Harry Carey. He was the voice of the summer. When I was a kid, you know, there was no air conditioning. And whether in your car or your house, you had the windows open. And during the summer, everybody had the radio on. It was right. Harry Carey. So this was a very familiar voice. And then I moved to Chicago in the late 60s, and I turn on the radio, and there's Harry Carey, but he was broadcasting for the White Sox. He just left St. Louis. But anyway, my favorite Wrigley Field moment, just before it happened, a few months before it happened, you know, I had just quit my job. I was a young fella, had a little boy, little child, and I remember coming home. It was 1982, and I had to tell my wife. I said, you know, this is my first year as an independent businessman, and it's not going great. We got to kind of watch our money here,
right,
just a little bit. And she said, I wanted to tell you something. And you know, when you begin a conversation, as she did, with the B word, bargain, what I'm talking about, you know what follows isn't going to be any good.
No,
right?
Not at all.
So,
no.
So she begins to tell me that they had a deal on season tickets to Wrigley Field. Here I am, you know, really nervous about money. She said, they were only $2,500. I said, what? She said, well, I didn't buy them for everybody, just for you and Billy. That's my son. I said, you spent $5,000? Now, this was 30 years ago.
That's a lot of money, yeah.
That's like that's like $15,000 now.
Yeah.
Or $20,000. And I thought, oh, man. But anyway, a couple months later, I go to Wrigley Field. It's on opening day. I'm there with my son. And, you know, you always feel good when you go to Wrigley Field, you know, even if times are bad. So we went there and watched the ball game. And the seventh inning stretch, you know, I'd been looking up in the broadcast booth to see if Harry Carey was there. It was his first time at Wrigley Field. Seventh inning stretch, I see him, and he's leaning out of the broadcast booth, and he picks up the microphone, and I've never heard such bad singing in my life. This is new. And he starts singing, "Take me out to the ball."
I remember completely
and
about that, yeah.
And that famous voice,
yeah.
And I said, wow, I'm going to be there all the time this year. So that was my greatest Wrigley Field moment. And, you know, by the way, I should tell your listeners, anybody who's going to be around the Chicago area tomorrow, Harry Carey's restaurant is one of the greatest steakhouses in Chicago or anywhere. They invited us in for the world premiere of the documentary film, Wrigley Field, The Centennial. That's the name of the documentary that's on the DVD with my book and the name of the book, too. And I can't tell you how excited I am to be at Harry Carey's, the second greatest baseball venue ever.
Oh, most definitely. And I see that motivation, especially as a Cubs fan. And I don't know how the 80s were for you, especially the first year of season tickets. How did the Cubs do that year?
Well, that was kind of a mediocre year. But, you know, in 1984, they won the divisional championship. And I think that was the first postseason play at Wrigley Field. I think since 1945, I have to check my stats. But all of a sudden, the Cubs were playing in the postseason, which was just amazing to everybody.
And it's amazing to, again, the feel of the ballpark, and for people that would go to the games, even when the Cubs have had losing seasons. We could talk about the winning and the losing of Cub baseball, but again, it's the tradition of going to Wrigley Field, and there's nothing like it. There's so many different parts of the atmosphere of Wrigley that just make it unlike any other ballpark, and for it to be one of the oldest ballpark in the National League, people just flock to it from that are not Cubs fans, right? When they come into town,
well,
this is one of
the '50s and '60s, and probably most of your listeners weren't even watching baseball then, but the Cubs were just kind of lovable losers. And though they had some great guys playing for the team. They had Ernie Banks and Ron Santo and Billy Williams was playing back then, and Milt Pappas, a fabulous pitcher. So we had great Cubs. It just weren't putting them together. In 1969, which is shortly after I moved to Chicago, they were in first place in August. First place. Everybody thought, man, this is the year. And, of course, the Mets aced them out.
Right.
Mets finally won the pennant that year. Of course, 69 was a big year for the Mets, and it was a great year for the Cubs. But that cry next year, it just kept going and going and going. And, we're still saying, wait till next year. And this, right now, next year is going to be the centennial year. And like always, we're hoping. But wouldn't that be something if in the 100th year that the Cubs finally make it to the World Series?
It can happen, Les. Look at the Pirates, how they were able to make a big comeback from not a great team.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The cyber station, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
To to at least contention to the playoffs, and the Cubs at least can spend more money when if they do compete at the end to get the opportunity to do that. So when we get back, more with Les Krantz, author of Wrigley Field, The Centennial, 100 Years at the Friendly Confines. You're listening to Author's Corner, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Author's Corner on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. You can check out all the different things at the website. Enjoy Author's Corner. And now working with Triumph Books, I'm just so pleased to have such amazing authors. And Les Krantz is really educating me on Wrigley Field. And what I want to go is to the winning times of the Cubs. And I guess they have a kind of a tradition where it seems almost like the Red Sox, so the Red Sox finally became winners again, that there was kind of a curse, almost kind of like the Cleveland Indians in a way as well, that just the years that at one point they were really good. What years were they really good, Les?
You talk about Cleveland now?
No, I'm talking about Chicago.
Well, you know, 1969, all of a sudden they came to life, and we won the divisional championship in 84, and then we had some more postseason play in the 80s, and in the 2000s, we had a lot of postseason play. But, you know, I think the most exciting year of all was 1998. Remember what happened there, Neil? Think about it.
That was Sammy Sosa and stuff, right?
Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire.
Yes,
you got to get Mark McGwire in on the
conversation. No, we will. Oh, yeah, I forgot your St. Louis guy, too.
Because these guys were dueling it out. There was a shootout, you know, and every time you went to Wrigley Field, you know, especially when the Cardinals were there, you saw these two incredible power hitters. It reminded me of, Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris, which was back in 1961 when Roger Maris busted Babe Ruth's record. And in September of 1998, the boys were just as close as could be. It was tied at 59 apiece, and all of a sudden, Mark McGwire, he got number 60 and 61. And then he hit 62, and Sammy was, I think, 58 home runs at that time. But over Labor Day weekend in 1998, Sammy got number 59, number 60, the tie Babe Ruth, and then he got number 61 to beat Babe Ruth, and he got number 62 to tie Mark McGwire. He'd hit more home runs than anyone in history. So I think without question that 1998 was the most exciting year. I can't imagine it getting much more exciting than that, no matter what happens.
Exactly, because you're never going to forget that, especially when Sosa came out of nowhere compared to McGwire. Everyone knew McGwire was a home run hitter, but Sosa just went out, exploded and surprised Mark. Mark didn't think you'd have a chase at all. And
well, you know, Billy Williams said, and it's, and you'll see him in this documentary film, Wrigley Field, The Centennial. He said, you know, the fans just love the home run. And, you know, that's what gets them off their chairs. And that's what keeps them coming back. And, boy, we had plenty of that in 1998, didn't we?
Oh, absolutely. I remember that year. Everyone does in certain ways. What was the best year of the Cubs? The Cubs have won the World Series, correct?
Well, the Cubs won the World Series. As a matter of fact, in my book, there's all kinds of rare photos of the Cubs in the World Series. By the way, I guess I should say that my book is a coffee table book. It's a illustrated book. It has over 200 photos, some rare vintage photos, you know, some very contemporary and today. But one of the things I think that kind of makes me very, very proud of the documentary film of this of the same title, Wrigley Field, The Centennial. It has every single World Series that the Cubs were ever in.
Oh, wow.
Were ever in their Wrigley Field days. And they won the World Series in 1918. Amazingly, it wasn't played at Wrigley Field. It was played at Comiskey Park, the White Sox home park, because at that time Wrigley Field wasn't big enough. It was just single deck seating. They didn't put on the second deck till the 1920s. And then we also have the 1929 World Series where they played the Philadelphia Athletics. And then in the 30s, they played the Yankees a number of times. They played them in 1932, and they played them again in 35. They played them in 38, and the Cubs were in the World Series again. In 1945, they played the Detroit Tigers. And by the way, Hank Greenberg, one of the greatest power hitters of his era, a lot of people called him the Hebrew Hammer. He was challenging Babe Ruth. He was there in the 49 World Series. And maybe if we do this interview next year, Neil, I can tell you about the 2014 World Series. Write my name down on your little things to do next year, will you?
I will definitely write you. I will definitely.
Okay.
We'll keep in touch via Facebook and Twitter and all these different things, because Les, I you never know. Again, the stories, the excitement of sports. That's what makes sports so amazing, is that the comeback stories, the different things, and then with the tradition of 100 years at Wrigley, I'm sure we have other memories. You talked about Mark McGwire, of other players having unbelievable games at Wrigley Field. And I don't know if that's in the book, but I'm sure.
Of course it's in the book. Just to mention a few, Ernie Banks hit his 500th home run at Wrigley Field. And as a matter of fact, some people who weren't Cubs, Stan Musial, had his 3,000th hit at Wrigley Field. Mm. One of the greatest Cub pitchers, Greg Maddux, had his 3,000th strikeout at Wrigley Field. So there's just all kinds of fabulous memories, and, of course, a lot of contemporary guys like Alfonso Soriano. He was just traded back to the Yankees, darn it. You know, but he's been playing there in recent years. In 2008, it was kind of a tragic centennial, because last time was an anniversary for the Chicago Cubs organization in 2008. It had been an even century since the Cubs had won the World Series. The last time was in 2008.
Wow. And, you know, think about one.
Excuse me. Last time was in 1908.
1908. I was about to say 2008.
Okay.
Oh, wrong.
In 2008, we thought this could be the year. You know,
Yeah.
We had Carlos Zambrano, who, kind of our bad boy of baseball, a pitcher, but he was a heck of a pitcher. And, the guy could even hit, too. He had some like 30 home runs in his career. And, of course, he had some problems in the clubhouse and had an anger management problem. But he was something to watch out there in the mound, I'll tell you that.
Well, I think one of your not greatest memories would be when the Pirates clinched the wild card at Wrigley Field this year. So, and isn't it funny? It's drawing a blank who hit the home run. I don't know if you watched the game or not.
Well, the Cubs got in the World Series once in a wild card.
Yeah, okay. Well, you'll take a World Series over wild card any day. What was your biggest other surprises of the book that kind of really our listeners out there would be very surprised about Wrigley? That was really interesting about Lou Gehrig. Anything else?
Well, Mel Tappas, was one of the great pitchers of the 1970 years, and he had kind of what a lot of people call, quote, a disappointing no-hitter, where he actually had a no-hitter going, and he actually lost the game, which was amazing. He had an 8-0 lead, and all eyes, turned to the mound, and he went into the ninth inning with a perfect game on the line. That is a perfect game, he blew that in the ninth inning, and that was one of the great disappointments at Wrigley Field. But it was sure something to watch, I'll tell you that.
Now, talk about the ivy. How did that happen? What's so different about the ivy? Tell me a little bit about
that. Well, they originally planted in 1935, and they kind of flushed it out in 1937. And Philip Wrigley wanted to kind of give Wrigley Field the ambiance of the Wrigleyville neighborhood that it was in. And that's kind of one thing that distinguishes Wrigley Field from all other parks, is that it's got a beautiful ivy out there. It's, something that every Chicagoan kind of loves, that ivy. As a matter of fact, a lot of people try to, out in the bleachers, try to reach down and get some. And it's also on some of the infield walls, too. But I think that's one thing that's kind of charming about Wrigley Field. You know, you don't see that in the ballpark, especially the new ones today, which are, you know, kind of very sterile, and they're named after big companies, you know. They're not named after people so much. But that's the charm of Wrigley Field. And when we interviewed a bunch of the Cubs for this documentary of the same title as my book, Wrigley Field, The Centennial, a lot of mention that about the, you know, the neighborhood atmosphere, yeah, and the ambiance. And it's kind of a small park. Some people say it's a home run hitter's paradise. But as Ron Santo pointed out, you know, the wind blows out, but the wind blows in, too. And sometimes you can't even get a cannon out of there. And also, it's kind of a small park. And, you know, in fact, Ron Santo also mentioned, he said, one of the things that he found out after he retired, when he sat one time in the first row of the box seats, and he said, I didn't realize how close that is to home plate. He said, you know, I can't. He says, you know, the fans probably heard a lot of things I said to the umpire. So in that way, Wrigley Field is very, very different.
Okay, Les, where can we purchase your book and learn more about you? And so our listeners out there can purchase it for Christmas. What a great Christmas gift that would be.
The book is Wrigley Field, The Centennial by me, Les Kranz. Anywhere books are sold, you can buy it online at all the big online bookstores, you know, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, iTunes has it. Also, most bookstores, at least in the, you know, Midwest area, so it's all over. It's going to be real easy to find. Wrigley Field, The Centennial comes with a DVD documentary, so you actually get both. It's $25.95. It's a beautiful picture book. I think it's a great gift. And by the way, if anybody can be at Harry Carey's on the...
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shake-up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.